And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's 8 minutes after 11 p.m. on February 6th. It's Saturday, Lisa Wolf, and this is the WGN Radio Theater, program 49, if you didn't know. I tattoo it on my arm so that I know. See all these tattoos on my arm?
No, I don't.
Every show I have a tattoo.
Do you actually have
so
a tattoo?
So I don't. I actually do have a tattoo, yeah. Not very proud of it, though. Mike Costella is here, our executive producer. Shane Reardon, our producer in the booth there. Lisa Wolf, my co-host. What's going on, Lisa?
Tattoo-free, Carl. I have none.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, thanks.
And we have classic radio shows all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN playing all your favorite old-time radio shows, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Suspense, The Whistler, Gunsmoke, Gangbusters. I can go on and on. Don't test me, Lisa.
Oh, I know you can.
I can go on and on. Tonight, all the way to 2 in the morning, we have Nick Carter, Master Detective, Phil Harris and Alice Faye, and X Minus One. So we have a detective, a comedy, and a sci-fi adventure for you, and it's all brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Amityville: The Awakening is an upcoming supernatural horror drama, the 14th installment in the Amityville saga.
Another Amityville
14?
Horror movie?
Yeah, and it stars this actress as a single mother who moves her three children into the infamous Amityville house.
Okay, if you can tell us who this celebrity is, you're going to win two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She played Stacy Hamilton in 1982's Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
No, they're like variables that I might not be good at.
All right, if you know who that celebrity is, call us right now, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this short break.
And we are still playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's hear that movie clip one more time.
No, they're like variables that I might not be good at.
And we have Tom on the line from Marengo. Hey, Tom.
Hello.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. We're glad to hear your voice on the radio. And can you tell me who that celebrity is that's going to be in Amityville: The Awakening?
That would be Jennifer Jason Leigh.
You are absolutely correct. And guess what?
What's that?
You have won a pair of tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, February 13th through 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank and the exclusive bank of the show. Are you a fan of the Auto Show?
That I am.
Good.
Awesome.
Terrific. I hope you have a great time there.
Very good, Tom. Hey, Tom, I got a quick for a bonus points. Do you know who her father was? He was an actor. Do you know who her father was? He was killed tragically while making a movie. He was actually making the Twilight Zone film, and he was there was a catastrophe. A helicopter crashed, and he was killed. Her father was Vic Morrow.
You didn't give him a chance to answer.
Yeah. It didn't sound like...
Maybe he knew.
I don't know.
Knew that, right, Tom?
I actually see him in combat. Watching on
that's
ETV,
right. That's right.
I honestly would not have had it.
All right. Well, you know what? I kind of felt that through the microphone and through the speakers here, buddy. But you're going to the auto show.
Goodbye.
And thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening. All right, Lisa, it's time for Nick Carter, Master Detective. This was a detective first seen in Street and Smith dime novels and pulp magazines. And like Sherlock Holmes, Nick Carter solved cases too tough for police. He earned the moniker Master Detective. Lon Clark played Nick Carter through the entire run from 1943 to 1955. And it was sponsored for much of its run by Old Dutch Cleanser. Patsy Bowen, Nick's assistant, was played by Helen Choate and Charlotte Manson. Scubby Wilson, the reporter, was played by John Kane. And Sergeant Matheson, head of the police department, was played by Ed Latimer. Ran 23 years on radio, and Walter Pigeon played him in three MGM films. Not bad, huh?
Yeah, I had a long run.
Yeah, it did. All right, time for Nick Carter, Master Detective, November 10th, 1943, called The Drug Ring Murder, starring Lon Clark. Here's part one of Nick Carter, Master Detective.
What's the matter? What is it?
Another case for Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure...
The Drug Ring Murder. Or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Left-Handed Killer.
Well, Mr. Nicholas Carter, are you going to answer your telephone or are you going to take me out to lunch as you promised?
There's no reason why I can't do both, Patsy. Nick Carter speaking.
Dick, this is Riley at headquarters.
Oh, how are you, Lieutenant?
There goes my...
It's on your mind.
Right.
Murder. And you're right in the middle of it, Nick. Meet me at the city morgue as quick as you can. I'm waiting here.
What's the matter, Riley? Can't headquarters solve this case without me?
Who said anything about your solving the case? You get yourself down to the morgue right away, and that's an order.
An order, Riley? What are you talking about?
The body of a man was washed up on the beach this morning, only he didn't die from drowning. It was murder.
Yes?
There was no identification on the body. None at all. Except one of your business cards. Nick Carter, private detective.
What?
I hid the card in my pocket as soon as I laid eyes on it. But there's a chance one of the reporters saw it before I did. Now, do I have to draw you a diagram?
You've already done it. I'll be there in a double rally. Bye.
What's up, Nick?
Plenty. Look, Patsy, hold on the office until you hear from me. I'll call you within an hour.
I knew you shouldn't have answered that phone.
Business before pleasure, Patsy. And right now, I've got business at the city morgue. Where have you got him, Riley? On the slab out here?
He's on ice. Oh. In the box at the end of the room there. And I'm telling you one thing, Nick Carter. It's lucky for you that I was here when he was brought in.
Now, look, Riley. Surely you aren't trying to pull me into this thing just because the fellow was carrying one of my cards. Well, there are probably hundreds of people I never heard of are carrying my name in their vest pockets.
Well, if you'd rather be explaining to the captain how your card got on a corpse...
Oh, now, take it easy, Riley.
You know what it means for an officer of the law to conceal evidence, Nick. How do I know one of those reporters or photographers isn't telling the captain right now that...
Let's worry about one thing at a time. You said the body was washed up on the beach on the north shore of Long Island?
Yes, it was. Stuffed in a gunny sack with every bit of identification removed.
Hmm.
Everything was ripped out except a concealed pocket.
Yes, I know. With my card in it.
Yes. Here we are. Last box here. Now, take a good look, Nick. Yeah, did you ever see him before?
Oh, yes. That's Stanley Phillips.
Huh?
Dr. Stanley Phillips. He's a research chemist. Sort of an eccentric.
Oh, balmy, huh?
No, just strange. He's assisted me in a few investigations. But for the most part, he was pretty much of a hermit. Didn't like to mix with people.
Yeah, that don't make sense. People who mind their own business don't get and go around getting themselves murdered. Where did he live?
There's a big house on a Long Island Sound, but his laboratory was on his yacht. It was anchored about half a mile or so up in the house, if I remember correctly.
Laboratory on a yacht?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was balmy.
Hey, Riley, look. Here in his neck.
Well, what did you expect? I told you he was strangled. The autopsy showed he was dead before he was put into the gunny sack and thrown into the water.
I know, but that isn't what I mean. Here, look at the prints in his neck. Closely, look at him.
Yeah, well?
Unless I miss my guess, Riley, he was murdered by a left-handed killer.
Say, maybe you've got something there, Nick. I'll phone the fingerprint expert.
Hey, wait a minute, Riley. Let me hit the phone first. I gotta be on my way.
Hey, now don't be forgetting. You can't take long on this, Nick. The captain will be wanting to question you about your card being found on the body. I can't hold off more than a few hours.
Give me those few hours, Riley, and I'll wrap the murderer up in wax paper.
Nicholas Carter's office.
Oh, hello, Patsy. We got work to do.
Yes, Nick?
I want you to go through the files and dig out all the stuff we have on Dr. Stanley Phillips.
That queer duck who did some work for you once?
Yeah, that's the one. Research chemist.
Uh-huh.
Get all the dope on. I'm gonna meet you down in front of the office in 10 minutes. I'll pick you up.
All right, Nick.
That's all.
Yeah, where are you headed for, Nick?
The Phillips Estate on Long Island Sound. Meet me there as soon as you get the report on the fingerprints of Stanley Phillips' neck.
And apparently neither he nor his sister ever married. After the parents died, they continued to live in the big manor house.
What did you say the sister's name was?
Rose Phillips.
Rose. Go on.
You know all about his laboratory being on his yacht.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be one of the best private laboratories in the country. Used to do a lot of research work for big companies. At the laboratory assistant, Tom Marks, young man. And let's see what else. His hobby was writing. Scientific articles they were. Usually about the effects of habit-forming drugs. He had an article in Popular Research last month entitled Morphine Exposed.
So he wrote about habit-forming drugs, huh? You know, Patsy, this case might turn out to be more than just an ordinary murder.
I guess nobody's home, Nick.
You're wrong about that, Patsy. Saw the curtains at the window move. Pounding on the door isn't going to do any good either. Whoever's in there evidently doesn't want callers today. However...
What are you going to do?
Open the door. This little lock picker of mine. There it is. All right, come on, Patsy. We're going in.
I don't see anybody.
Stay behind me.
Put your hands up. Over your head.
She's got a gun, Nick.
You're Rose Phillips, I take it, miss?
Keep your hands up. I'm asking the questions. Who are you?
I'm Nick Carter, and this
Nick
is...
Nick Carter?
Yes. And this is my assistant, Patsy Boone.
Nick Carter, the great detective? Well, my brother often speaks of you. He thinks you're wonderful.
Nick, she doesn't know yet.
Miss Phillips, I'm sorry to have to tell you like this, but your brother is dead.
He's dead?
Yes. I'm afraid he was murdered. Now, if you'll just put that gun away, Miss Phillips, we'll talk things over.
Of course, Mr. Carter, I'm sorry. This is all such a shock.
It was a fiendish killing. And I'm going to do all I can to bring the criminal to justice. You may be sure of that.
Oh, Rose. Rose.
I'm in here, Richard.
Oh. Well, who are these people? I thought Stanley told you never to let strangers in the house.
It's all right, Richard. This is Nick Carter, the detective, and his assistant.
Oh, well, that's different. How do you do, Mr. Carter? I'm Richard Coles.
I take it you've already heard about Dr. Phillips.
Yes. Ghastly, isn't it? I can hardly believe it. The police say it was murder. For the life of me, I can't imagine who would want to murder Stanley. He was a strange man, Mr. Carter, very strange. He had a phobia about not letting anyone in the house when he was away.
You seem to manage an entrance all right, Mr. Coles.
Well, I...
Mr. Coles is a very old friend of the family and has always had a key to the house. He's our lawyer.
Look out, Nick! There's someone at the window. He's got a gun! I can't get over it, Nick. You don't seem to be surprised that you were shot at back there in the house.
I'm not, Patsy. That's why I was standing beside that suit of armor. That protected me by deflecting the bullets.
Nick, your presence on the Phillips case is most annoying to someone.
Too bad that window was frosted glass. Couldn't get a look at the gunman. That tiny crack the window was open. Well now, did you find what I told you to look for in the cottage occupied by Tom Marks, the lab assistant?
Yes, I found a pair of his gloves.
Good.
Had to go through all his desk drawers to find them, too.
Let me see them. All seems to be adding up. Almost too neatly.
Adds up to a pair of gloves, that's all.
Look, Patsy, Coles told me back there something about the terms of Phillips' will. If he lived to be 50, his estate was to go to a foundation. If he died before that, Rose was to inherit all the estate.
But that makes Rose the...
No. I don't suspect Rose. Her grief seemed genuine. But there's something else I learned. Tom Marks, Phillips' lab assistant, is in love with Rose. They've been wanting to get married, but Phillips opposed the marriage.
Now the field is clear. With oodles of money to boot. But that still doesn't make Tom Marks...
Patsy, I'm almost certain Phillips was strangled by a left-handed killer. These gloves of Marks you brought me show that he's left-handed.
Oh. And that leads us where?
Right out to the laboratory and the yacht. I've got to find Tom Marks.
Nick, why in the world do you suppose Dr. Phillips had his laboratory way out here in the middle of the Sound?
There's no mystery to that one, Patsy. Told me why once.
Well, why?
So people couldn't bother him. I'd have used his technical knowledge a lot more often on cases myself if it'd been more accessible. Well, here we are. This is the Phillips yacht. I'll tie up here.
I've never climbed up a rope ladder before.
And you're not going up now either. Not until I look around the boat myself.
Oh, Nick, am I helping you on this case or not?
You are, but I don't want you taking unnecessary chances.
Nick, please.
Now, quiet a minute, Betsy. Let's see if we can raise somebody from here.
Hello up there! Hello aboard the Phillips yacht!
It's funny.
Tom Marks is aboard. He's keeping quiet about it.
Well, we'll find out right now. You better stay here in the motorboat.
And let you solve this case alone? Not a chance.
Okay, okay. But stay directly behind me, remember?
Phew. Climbing this rope ladder is no cinch. I'm glad I'm not a sailor.
Can you make it?
Uh-huh. I'm coming. What do you think you'll find, Nick?
Tom Marks, I hope. Here. Let me give you a hand over the rail. All right. Oopsie daisy.
Oh, thanks. Well, there's nobody to lay out the welcome rug on the deck of this floating laboratory.
Well, that doesn't mean we're alone, Betsy. Come on. We're going down this companionway.
Okay.
I'm not mistaken. It leads to Phillips' laboratory. Mm-hmm. This is the laboratory. All right, Betsy, stay behind me. I'm going to open the door. Hey, Marks. Tom Marks, you in there? All right, Betsy. We can go in.
Well, Tom Marks seems to have vanished, but he certainly left a mess behind him.
Yes. Overturned retorts. Bunsen burner knocked over. Look here on the floor.
Broken bottle.
Sulfuric acid spilled and eating into the floor. Yes, this is where Dr. Stanley Phillips met his death, all right. And when the killer came at him, he was sitting at this desk writing.
Well, how do you figure that?
That bottle of ink tipped over. Wonder if he has any papers here that'll tell us what we want to know. Desk been rifled. Everything of any value has already been taken.
Still all adds up to Tom Marks, doesn't it?
Yep, seems to. We'll know for sure as soon as Riley gets the report from the fingerprint expert.
Nick!
Hmm?
Nick, come here. Look what I found in the sink.
What?
This piece of paper.
I see. Now, that's in Dr. Phillips' handwriting.
Well, somebody tried to burn it out. Then they threw it on the drain board of the sink here. Part of it didn't burn.
Let's see if I can figure it out. Like you to know, the man whom I have trusted and worked with these many years is, I have discovered, the head of a giant dope peddling ring. Been using my premises to carry on his business. This man is...
Nick, your lights have gone off! Oh.
I don't know. She might have been shot there, Lisa.
Well, it's a little ambiguous yet, right?
Oh, my gosh. Sounded like she was shot. Oh, my gosh.
Or she shot.
Oh, my. All right, we'll get back to Nick Carter, Master Detective, the drug ring murder from 1943, starring Lon Clark in just a couple of moments. And there's a picture of Lon Clark up at our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and search us, right, Mike?
Yeah, WGM Radio Theater, and the picture is up there.
All right, so check it out, and please do like us when you do go there. Let's take a quick break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Yeah. Lisa, may I have this dance? No?
I have to think about that one.
Come on. I won't step on your feet, I promise.
You can't stand too close, though.
I don't know how to dance, though, but I won't step on your feet, on your corns. Don't worry, I won't. Promise,
yeah,
I won't.
Thanks.
I won't hurt your corns. You know?
Perfectly pedicured feet, yeah, mind
sure.
you.
Yes, I am sure they are. I'm sure they are, Lisa. You don't live in that high rent district for no reason. That's for
the
sure.
The high rent district.
Yeah, the high rent district.
The red light district.
Yeah,
you
the
mean?
Red light. Yeah, exactly. It is. Let me see. And by the way, thank you, David. Great, great job as always, sir. 11:36 here on a Saturday night. We're here on a Saturday. It feels different Saturdays, don't they?
It does. I think it's Shane. Shane, you make things
Probably.
Feel differently,
yes.
right?
Good or a bad difference?
No, it's good difference.
Definitely good. Yeah.
I feel like there's more people out here on
there
Saturday
are.
Night.
They're waving. Yeah, they're waving away over here. I've been my hand's going to fall off from
yeah,
waving.
Yeah, you're exhausted, aren't you?
I'm zonked.
Zonked
I'm
from
zonked.
All that hand movement. It's a lot
exactly.
of work, isn't it?
Boy. Lisa and I, Mike and Shane, we're here every Saturday from 11 p.m. till 2 in the morning. And on Sundays, we're back. So like 20-something hours later,
we
we're
still
back.
Can't
I don't know how
many
hours. Close
later.
To 20-something hours.
We have Dave Flyer. He knows.
Yeah, Dave knows. We're here on Sunday nights from 11 till 2 in the morning as well with more classic radio. We play 6 classic radio shows every weekend here, and we're tuning into Nick Carter, Master Detective, a little later. It's the very first episode of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show, and then it's X-1, good sci-fi drama. And all of this is brought to you in part by Catchbride, and they have a drawing with us where you can win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Want to tell everybody about it, Lisa?
Yes, we want to give one lucky winner an entire year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. We do that every single month at the end of the month. So if you send in a picture of you and your cat, or just your cat, whatever you like, with your name and your cat's name and your city and state, we send it to, you send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Mike will post those pictures eventually on Facebook. And either way, you are entered to win the drawing at the end of the month, and one lucky winner will win the best cat litter that exists in life, Cat's Pride.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to repeat anything you said because you said it perfectly.
Lisa gives me
a hard time. She always says, you always repeat what I said.
You do. And then when we have callers, I always say, thank you so much for calling in. And you go, thank you for calling in.
Yeah.
Did you know
that? Because I
want
to thank him, too.
Okay, so next time I'm going to say thank you from Carl and me for calling
in. And then
in.
I won't be able to say anything.
I'm going to work
on that. That's how you can stymie me.
Or Carl will say thank you for listening.
Yeah,
something
yeah,
he'll
like
come
that.
Up with something
and
else.
And, Mike, what's the Facebook and website and all that good stuff?
We're on Facebook, WGM Radio Theater. You can like us there. I've got pictures of all of these actors going up on our Facebook page. And as Lisa mentioned, I will be posting pictures of cats for the Cats Pride Contest. We also have a website, WGNRadioTheater.com, where we can check out our schedule, which I also post on Facebook weekly. So if you hop onto Facebook, check it out like Wednesday or Thursday, you can see the schedule on Facebook for the weekend, including the show, original show dates, and the name of the episode.
Yeah, and it's and I have to take complete blame for our website not having the schedule up. Shame on Carl, because it just got away from me.
We had a lot of listeners who are waiting for the February schedule, which goes up on our website, and we know we're behind.
You can send me hate mail.
Well, we're sorry, but it's coming. We're on it.
I wish I could blame it on Lisa. You don't know how badly.
He loves
I
to blame
wish
things
I could
on
blame
me.
It on Lisa, but I can't. This one thing, I can't.
But usually, even when it's not my fault, you blame it on me. So why is this different?
Because, you know. What's the weather like under that bus? How is it? Is it
tell
good?
Me about
What's
it.
What's it like down there?
Oh, I would know.
Is there
know.
A lot of cracks in the on the concrete?
Oh, I would know for sure.
All right, let's get back to this. Nick Carter, Master Detective, November 10th, 1943, the drug ring murder. Here's the conclusion of Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Patsy. Mm-hmm. Patsy, where are you? Patsy.
Nick.
You all right, Patsy?
My head. Somebody hit me.
Stay where you are. I'll find the switch.
Do you have your flashlight?
Yeah, I'll find the switch in just a second. Oh, the lights won't work. It must have been turned off the master switch in the engine room. That means there's more than one person on this boat besides us. One of them turned off the lights and the other one shot at us in here.
You were right when you said you felt everything wasn't okay on this yacht.
You able to get up, Patsy?
Oh, sure. I'm all right now. Just a big hen's egg on my head, that's all.
Okay, come on.
Nick, did they take the note?
It's just what I want to find out. Let's see.
Flash your light down in the sink.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, but wait.
What are you going to do?
Clean up the sink a little. Ashes don't look well scattered around in the white sink. Carefully now. There we are. Now we're ready.
Ready for what?
To search this yacht from stem to stern.
What in blazes has been keeping you, Nick? I've been cooling my heels on this dock for the past half hour here.
I hope you'd be here, Riley.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Hello, Patsy. Well, say, you look as if you'd seen a ghost on that yacht.
I did.
Somebody took a shot at us in the dark.
What?
Patsy got knocked down the frigate and got a nasty bump in her head.
Well, say, who did it, Nick?
Whoever it was made a neat getaway. Patsy and I searched the ship afterwards from end to end, but didn't find a soul.
Did you see anybody coming in from the yacht, Lieutenant?
Nary a soul's come in off that boat since I've been here. In fact, the only two people who've been near here was two fishermen.
Are you sure they were fishermen?
Am I sure? Now, look, Nick, don't be giving me that. It was bona fide fishermen, all right. They pulled their little rowboat to shore a ways down the beach, and I saw them bring in their catch. And a nice string of fish it was.
Okay, Riley.
So they were really vigilant.
Well, what about your report, Lieutenant?
Oh, there. Well, Nick was right. Our fingerprint expert examined the marks on Dr. Phillips' neck and said he was undoubtedly strangled by a left-handed killer. And now all we've got to do is find a left-handed man who had a reason to murder the doctor.
We found him.
What's that?
Dr. Phillips' laboratory assistant, Tom March, is left-handed.
Say, you sure worked fast, Nick. And it's a good thing, too. The captain found out about your card being found on the body. Hey, what kind of a scoundrel is this, Tom March?
I don't know. Haven't seen him yet. Wasn't at his cottage, and he wasn't in the lab in the yard.
Now, let's make tracks, Mr. Private Detective, and search the grounds here.
Wait a minute, Riley. There's one thing more you ought to know.
Huh?
Whoever killed Dr. Stanley Phillips is the head of a giant dope ring. Phillips was killed because he was about to expose the man.
Hey, that would be the laboratory assistant. He'd have access to drugs.
Mr. Carter!
Who in tarnation is that?
Richard Coles, close friend of the Phillips and also the lawyer. Oh. O'Reilly,
yeah?
Put this envelope in your pocket. Careful of it. It's a piece of evidence I picked up in the boat.
Okay, Nick.
Mr. Carter,
I've been hunting everywhere for you.
Oh, Mr. Coles, this is Lieutenant Riley from headquarters.
Oh, I'm glad you're here, Lieutenant. We're up against a dangerous criminal.
Don't worry, Mr. Coles. The law always gets its man.
What do you want to see me about, Mr. Coles?
Rose Phillips. She's gone.
Gone?
How do you know?
Come up to the house with me. I'll show you. Something has happened to her, I'm sure. Hurry! This is Rose's bedroom, Lieutenant.
Well, somebody was making a fast getaway, all right.
Yes. Just look at the room. Clothes strewn all over. One of her suitcases is gone, and this suitcase, half-packed, was left behind.
She and the laboratory assistant must have been in on this together. If she wasn't guilty, she wouldn't have run away.
Oh, she must have been out of her mind. Of course, Rose was in love with Tom, and...
Nick.
What's the matter, Betsy? What are you frowning at?
Rose Phillips didn't run away.
Didn't run away?
What are you saying, Patsy?
No girl would run away voluntarily and leave all her makeup behind. But look at that dressing table. Nothing's been touched.
You're right, Patsy.
Say, do you suppose... Oh, no, no.
What is it, Mr. Coles?
Do you suppose that Tom could have forced her to leave?
You mean kidnap her?
Yes.
Well, he won't get away with it. I'll call headquarters and have a cordon thrown around this entire district. We'll catch Tom Marks before he gets to the next town.
Good idea, Riley. Do that. Well, Mr. Coles?
Yes, Mr. Carter.
I guess Lieutenant Riley has this case all sewed up. His men will have Tom Marks and Rose Phillips within the hour.
Well, Mr. Carter, it was nice of you to take such an interest in my friend's death. Would you care for a cigarette?
Oh, no, thanks.
You, Lieutenant?
Why, sure. I don't mind if I do.
Of course. Light?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, good day, Mr. Coles.
Goodbye.
Carter. Come along, Patsy.
Where's the telephone, Mr. Coles?
There's one right over here on the table.
Hurry up, Patsy. We got work to do.
I thought you said the case was finished.
Not by a long shot. I said that for their benefit. Oh. You and I are going over this estate with a fine-tooth comb. I'm not satisfied yet.
You see anything, Nick?
Come on in. Shut the door.
Do you think anyone saw us headed for this boathouse?
I hope not. Oh, be careful here. Don't step off in the water.
Nick, there's a small speedboat in the water. Wouldn't you think they'd put it in dry dock so late in the season?
Depends, Patsy. Look up there, mounted in the bow.
A machine gun?
Mm-hmm. This boat was used for business.
Gee, who'd ever think a quiet little chemist like Dr. Phillips kept a mounted machine gun on a speedboat?
I believe this setup down here was news to Dr. Phillips, too. Hold on to my arm. We'll look around.
Oh, Nick, don't step on the fish.
String of fish?
Nick! Those fishermen Riley saw must have come in here.
Patsy, this catch isn't fresh.
What?
Those men used the string of dead fish just to fool Riley. And those were the men who made trouble for us on the yacht.
Yeah, they must have been. Plenty of life preservers stacked up in here.
Yeah, that's strange. Here, Betsy, take the flashlight and play it on this one.
Okay. Well, what are you doing, taking it to pieces?
No, just examining it. Aha! There we have it.
What?
A small waterproof pocket's been sewn in here. Yes, and it extends all the way around inside this life preserver. Pretty clever. Look, Betsy.
What is it?
These secret compartments are filled with dope. I bet every one of these life preservers is filled with drugs.
Nobody would ever think of looking in a life preserver for evidence.
I think Dr. Phillips did. And that's why he was murdered.
Nick. Nick.
Are you okay, Patsy?
Yes, but I can't stop crying.
Well, that's not surprising. Somebody threw a tear gas bomb through the window.
Oh.
That's right, friends. It was tear gas.
Who's there?
Pretty clever of me using the tools of my trade that way. Isn't it, Mr. Carter? But Tom Marks is always clever.
So you're Tom Marks, huh? I've been waiting to set my eyes on you.
It's too bad your eyes are filled with tear gas. Because now you'll never have that pleasure. Okay, Pete, come in and get the lady.
Right.
I'll take care of Mr. Carter myself.
Come on.
Let her go along. Here, let her go along.
Got those iron weights in the bag, Pete?
Sure, both of them. This guy'll never be washed up on a beach like the doc was.
Good. See, you tied a bag good and tight.
You know, I think he's passed out. He ain't moving none.
I did a job on him before we put him in the bag.
Listen to that dame, will you? Sounds like a hoot owl with a cold in the head. Shut up.
Oh, tighten the gag, Pete.
Okay.
That'll do it.
Hey, Carter ain't dead.
What does it take to kill that guy? I choked him like a rat and he's still talking. All right, speak your piece, Mr. Carter, because you don't have much longer.
You're not going to get away with this.
You hear what he said?
I'm telling you.
I doubt it, Mr. Carter. You're going straight down to Davy Jones' locker.
You'll pay for this. I'll have you behind bars within 24 hours.
Listen to him.
What do you fellas think you're going to do with Patsy Bone?
He's worrying about a dame when he's going to lose his own neck.
Go easy with her, I'm warning you.
Come on, let's get rid of him.
Okay.
It's dark enough now.
All right.
You got him? All right, lift him up. That's it.
I'll get you fellas for this.
Two, three, let her go.
I came as soon as I got your flashlight signal from the shore, Nick. You think the criminals are aboard the yacht here now?
You'll see in a minute. The laboratory's right down this companionway.
Hey, you're dripping wet from head to foot, Nick. What happened?
They tried to pull the same trick on Nick that they pulled on Dr. Phillips. Only it didn't work, because Nick can expand his neck and wrist muscles.
Yes, I had my hands free before I hit the water. There was no trick at all to cut my way out of the sack. And then I clung to the back of their motorboat until it reached the yacht here. I waited for the would-be killers to get aboard, untied Patsy, and here we are.
Ah, you're lucky, Nick.
He's smart, that's all.
Quiet. This is the door. Keep your gun ready.
Right.
Good evening, Mr. Coles.
What? Oh, Nick Carter. Well, come in, Mr. Carter. These two friends of mine and myself were just discussing whether you had found the criminals.
I think we have, Mr. Coles.
Good, good.
There's just one thing more I need to make sure I have the criminals. Riley.
Yeah?
Give me that envelope I asked you to keep for me.
Oh, sure, Nick. Here you are.
Thanks. Now, I'll just take the piece of burned paper out of this envelope.
Well, are those the pieces you gathered from the drain board?
Yes, Patsy. They were from the note Stanley Phillips wrote just before he was murdered. Now, I'll just use some of these chemicals in the burned paper.
Oh.
You see, gentlemen, even though this piece of paper's been burned, it is possible by using the correct chemical solution to bring out the writing that was on the paper before it was burned. In this case, I expect the writing will give the name of the man Phillips designated as head of the giant drug ring. And his killer.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yes, here it comes. The chemicals are beginning to act. The writing is beginning to show up. Good. The name is...
Nick, look out!
I got these two as hugs, Nick. Knocked him out cold.
Sorry I had to plug in the shoulder, Coles, but I had to put you out of action. Now, Riley, there's your murderer.
So it was Coles who did it.
You're right, Carter. I killed him.
The powers be praised, Nick. I thought Tom Marks was the killer.
Cole's had me fooled too, Riley, until this afternoon when he came running down from the house. And then I noticed his feet were wet, as if he'd been in waiting.
Then he was one of the men on the yacht, one of the fishermen Riley saw.
Right, Patsy. And another thing. The man who strangled me in the boathouse claimed to be Tom Marks. But Tom Marks is left-handed. The man who tried to strangle me used his right hand.
And you knew Phillips was murdered by a left-handed man.
That's right. I knew I was after a left-handed murderer. O'Reilly.
Huh?
Did you notice that when Coles lighted your cigarette for you this afternoon in Rose's room, he used his left hand?
By golly, he did. Then he's left-handed, too.
Right. When I saw him do that, I knew he was the killer. But I had to make him prove it.
Oh, you did that all right. That business about making the writing stand out on a piece of paper after it's burned is a new one to me, Nick.
Nick, can you actually do that?
Well, it can be done under ideal conditions. But this time, I was just putting on an act for Mr. Coles' benefit.
You mean you didn't actually make any writing appear on the burned paper?
Not a word, Mr. Coles.
And I fell for it like a sap.
Nick.
Hmm?
What's that?
I'm not sure, Patsy, but I have a hunch.
It's locked, Nick.
Oh, Patsy, since when did a locked door ever stop Nick Carter?
Quite right, Riley. When did it? This is no time for it to start. So, this one ought to do the trick. There we are.
Nick Carter. Oh, thank heaven, Rose.
This man with you is Tom Marks, Miss Phillips?
Yes, I am.
They were going to kill us, Mr. Carter. They tied us up and threw us in here. We heard them planning to throw us overboard.
Have you been imprisoned in here all this time, Mr. Marks?
No, not quite. I got a telephone call last night summoning me into the city to pick up some chemicals Dr. Phillips and I needed in an experiment. I was slugged as I stepped out of the car. And when I came too late this afternoon, I was in here, and so was Rose.
That Coles was a smart one. Throwing suspicion on you and then trying to get rid of you in order to make it look as if you'd run away.
Smart, but not smart enough for Nick.
Well, Riley, you've got your murderer.
I have that.
And Rose, you and Tom are safe.
Yes, thanks to you.
And I guess that's that.
Oh, no, Nick. You still have to solve my case.
Well, what's that, Betsy?
That luncheon date you promised Nick.
Oh.
Where are you and I going to have lunch at this hour?
Why, Well, say, that's easy, Betsy. I know a swell place in town, right across from the morgue. Come on.
This was another strange experience of Nick Carter, Master Detective, called The Drug Ring Murder, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Left-Handed Killer. Another of the curious adventures of Nick Carter, which are brought to you regularly at the same time by WOR Mutual. In the strange adventure you have just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by Lon Clark, Patsy by Helen Choate. The story was written for Nick Carter by Barth Conry. Original music was played by Lou White. The entire production was under the direction of Jock McGregor. Next week at the same time, listen to another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
The Substitute Bride, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Night Ferry.
This story is a copyrighted feature of Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. The Return of Nick Carter is produced in the studios of WOR and is broadcast over most of these stations every Wednesday evening at 8:30 Eastern War Time. This is Mutual.
Pretty certain, Lisa. Now, don't hold me if I'm wrong here. Pretty certain that was in Oregon.
I can't argue with what is correct.
Yeah, I think it was in Oregon.
That is very
Nick
good
Carter,
thinking.
Master Detective, November 10th, 1943, the drug ring murder. Let's take a break, then it's much more. Two of the WGN Radio Theater, where we play classic radio shows, and we have a very sexy young
and
lady.
And I'm sexy, and I know
and
it.
She knows it, mm-hmm. That's for sure. She has her own website, lisawolf.com.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's proof of sexiness.
I say more. Yeah. I mean, that's all I really have to say. We have Phil Harris and Alice Faye in this hour, and our next hour, X-1. So we play classic radio shows every single Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. I got it right, Lisa, till 2 in the morning. I'm Carl Amari, Lisa Wolf, Mike Costello, Shane Reardon. We're all here. And in a minute, we're going to talk to my good friend George White. We're going to talk about a new Ion television series that's coming out. And we may even do an Ion TV series. We're going to talk about it in a minute here. We might play some classic television on Ion for George. I'm trying to see if I can convince him to give us our own TV
We're
show.
We're flattering him up as
but
we speak.
First, we have our sponsor segment, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
The Huntsman: Winter's War is an upcoming dark fantasy sequel to Snow White and the Huntsman, and stars this actress as Ravenna, the evil queen.
All right, you want to win two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show? Tell us who this celebrity is Lisa's talking about. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She won an Oscar for her portrayal of serial killer Aileen Wuornos in 2003's Monster.
No, see, I was, I'm sorry, but when I read the ad, it said that you were looking for a secretary.
All right, there you go, all right?
Right.
Tell us who that is. Call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back with the one and only WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
No, see, I was, I'm sorry, but when I read the ad, it said that you were looking for a secretary.
And we have Dan on the line from Genoa City. Hey, Dan.
Hey.
How you doing?
Just fine, thank you.
Great, great. Can you tell me who that celebrity is?
Oh, it's, everybody knows this. It's Charlize Theron, hello.
You are right. I don't know if everybody knows it, but luckily you know it. So you are a winner, Dan. You have won two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, running February 13th through the 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank and the exclusive bank of the show. Are you a fan of the auto show?
A little bit, yep.
Good. Sure. Well, we hope that you enjoy it there.
Okay. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, and we appreciate you listening.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. When we when we're done talking to George White, we are going to tune in to Phil Harris and Alice Faye. But I want to introduce my good friend George. George, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good
really,
to see
really
you.
Fun to be here.
How about all these people walking around here and waving? And it's just great. It must be nice out.
It's like a beautiful summer day.
It's unseasonably high. It is. It's good to see you. And George has a lot of projects he's working on, Lisa. And one of them is for Ion Television, right? And I want our listeners to know about this show because they're going to want to watch this program.
Indeed it is. It's called Master Plan. Master Plan is a show following a group of entrepreneurs, myself and several other people, going around the world making business deals. A bunch of average people doing extraordinary things. And then the show itself spawns off about another 11 or 12 shows.
Whoa. And so this is going to be probably this winter. It'll be coming up like in maybe 6-8 months from now.
We're working on the shows right now. We're working on hopefully for fall release, and some of them have little bits and pieces coming together.
And you're shooting right now, right?
Yeah.
And so one of them is in Dubai. You're doing another entrepreneurs in Orlando. Another one is in New York, and where your cameras are following them. They're doing unbelievable deals. It's sort of like what you see on Shark Tank, but much bigger, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, instead of watching a bunch of billionaires buy cupcake companies for, you know, 20% equity for $80,000, you're watching people you've never heard of doing $100 million, $500 million deals. I've got wonderful partners, my partner Wade, who's probably listening in from Miami right now, Dina in New York, got really interesting people, people you've never heard of that have just extraordinary talent, average people, you'd walk by them on the street, and they've been involved in some real high-stakes deals, one of the biggest hotel companies in the world.
Are you able to share with us any of your deals that would, might be interesting to us?
I've got to watch how I do that. Some of these involve public companies, and
okay,
there's a disclosure issue, so we always have to deliver the finished product after the deals are closed.
And, yeah, I mean, this is a show, it's called Masters...
Master Plan.
Master Plan. Make sure you watch it on Ion Television. And George and I and Lisa were talking about a show ourselves. We play classic television, talk about the shows for Ion, so hopefully we'll put that together as well. George, great to talk to you. Great to see you. And maybe if you stick around, we'll try to talk a little bit more a little later.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Excellent. All right, let's get back to the old-time radio shows. Phil Harris and Alice Faye, the very first episode in the series, October 3rd, 1948. Let's tune into part one of Phil Harris and Alice Faye.
Good health to all from Rexall. Here's Phil Harris and Alice Faye.
Oh, Phil, are you ready?
Oh, darn it, you made me swallow a bobby pin. Yes, it's Sunday. Time for the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall drug products and your Rexall family druggist. And now your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. Written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Scharf and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. A month ago, the Harrises returned from their European trip and signed a contract with their new sponsor, the Rexall Drug Company. Let's go back to that day. Phil, Alice, and the children are in their garage, where Phil is polishing the English sports roadster that he bought in London.
Da 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 ya da 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 da. Today we sign with Rexall.
Hey, I better wear gloves when I'm around the car. I'm getting fingerprints on the steering wheel.
As I was saying, Phil, isn't it great to be home again?
Uh-huh.
Do you realize how lucky you are, having a beautiful home, two wonderful children?
And you, you beautiful dove, you. You lovely thing. I never thought I'd live to see the day when anything so gorgeous as you would belong to me.
Oh, thank you, Phil.
Alice, please, I'm talking to the car. I've never seen anything with such sleek lines.
I can remember when you used to say the same thing about me. When we first met, you told me I had sleek lines, too.
Look at the way she's made. She's so neat and trim.
I was just as neat and trim.
Look at the way she's built. So close to the ground.
I was built just as... Bill, will you forget the car? You think more of that thing than you do of your children.
That ain't so. Now, you know my kids mean more to me than anything else.
Daddy, may we touch the car?
You know we can't, Alice. Our little hands haven't been sterilized today. Won't you take us for a ride, Daddy?
What, and soil the tires? You're old enough to know better than that. I want this thing spick and span when I drive up to the Rexall office today.
What are you going there for, Daddy?
I'm going to work for him, kids. Yes, sir. Your daddy's going to work for the biggest drugstore outfit in the country.
You're going to work for a drugstore?
Yep. And your daddy will do a great job for him, too.
You said it. You'll make the best sandwiches they ever had.
I'm not going to make sandwiches. Hey, look, Alice, we better get started. You know, we're meeting the sponsor for the first time, and we don't want to be late. You know, punctuality is the keynote of success and the essence of business acumen.
Phil, what does that sentence mean?
Must mean something that's got words in it. Hey, kids, you better go in the house now. I'm going to back the car out. Let me get in it. Yeah. How much leg room she's got. Will you hear the way this English job purrs? That's funny. It ain't starting.
Maybe you don't have any gas in it, huh?
Ridiculous old girl. I put 10 liters of petrol in only a fortnight ago. Oh, Philip, how that stuff clings to you. Even the boat could... Hey, no wonder. I haven't got the ignition on. There she goes. Listen to that. Oh, listen to her. Purrs like a woman who's having her back scratched. Hey, stand out of the way, Alice. I gotta take it easy now. There ain't much room here in this garage. And I gotta back out very carefully.
Good morning, Philip.
I'd rip your clutch out.
Oh,
are you, William?
Oh, I feel wonderful. My friends and I just got back from a weekend camping trip.
Yeah, where'd you brownies go?
Well, we went...
We haven't got time to listen. Forget about it. We got an important date. I don't know if you know it or not, but we're going down to meet the officials of the Rexall Company and sign our radio contract.
Oh, I have dreaded the approach of this day all summer.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Philip, you've never met the officials of the company, and you just won't know how to talk to them. They've all gone to college, and it's so important that you make a good impression.
Oh, leave him alone, William. Phil is perfectly capable of taking care of himself.
You tell him, honey.
The best way for Phil to make an impression is to act natural and be himself. No, that won't do it.
Wait a minute, Alice. Willie, listen to me. Not only will I get the job for Alice and me, but if you'll just keep quiet and be nice for a minute, I'll tell you what I'll think of you. I'll even get you a job with Rexall.
Oh, will you really, Philip?
Yes, I will, and I'll ask them for a good salary for you, too.
Oh, Philip, how much?
$35 a week and all the iodine you can drink.
I don't think that's funny.
Boy, stop quarreling. Willie, come in the house while I get my coat.
Very well. Won't say another word. But I suggest you heed my advice, Philip, because I know whereof I speak. Yes, I do.
That character always trying to worry me. I wonder if he's right about the sponsor not liking me. Is it possible that they won't be overwhelmed by my radiant personality? Nah. I can see me now. I'll walk right up to the press and I'll say, sir, signing this contract will be of mutual benefit to both of us. And I'll do my best to uphold the dignity and traditions of your company. Furthermore...
Hiya, Curly.
Hiya, Frankie. I want to assure you that our association will ripen into a warm and beautiful friendship.
Oh, this is so sudden. You may kiss me, Curly.
Remley, I'm not talking to you. I'm just rehearsing my meeting with the sponsor today. You know, I'm going down to sign the contract for the season.
Maybe I better go with you, huh?
Okay. Now, look, Frankie.
What?
It's very important that we make a good impression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just concentrate for a minute. Now, look.
Yeah, I'm working.
What can we do to prove that we have the interest of his company at heart?
Let's do what we always do when we go in to see our sponsor. We'll pour shampoo on our heads and walk in singing, smile a while, let a song be your style, you bitch.
Wait a minute. Who? Hold up. That was last year, Remley. This year we're going to have a new sponsor.
Yeah?
Who? Rexall.
Oh, what a break. What a pleasure. What a sponsor!
What's a Rexall? Remley, don't ever let anybody hear you say that. It happens to be one of the biggest drug companies in the world.
You mean we're to be employed by a firm of apothecaries who manufacture pharmaceutical necessities?
Is that what they are?
Well, certainly.
Oh, boy. Well, I got to get more money. I never thought that you...
All ready, Phil.
Oh.
Hello, Frankie.
Hi, Alice.
Hey, come on. Get in the car, out. Pharmaceutical.
Oh, match.
Well, remind me when we get to... I never knew. Get in the car, will you? Now, look, you... Frankie, take your hand off of the door. Now you did it. You got a spot on it.
Well, sloppy old me. Just take it easy, pharmaceutical. I'll rub it off.
Remley, stop breathing on the car. You're taking the paint off.
All right, that's the first portion of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show, the very first show for their new sponsor, Rexall. Prior to this, they really didn't have a comedy series. They had sort of a band, you know, like a musical variety show. This was a straight-on comedy situation, comedy show. New format for Phil Harris and Alice Faye for new sponsor Rexall, October 3rd, 1948. And we'll get back to it in just a few moments. Welcome back to the show, 12:35 in the morning. It is officially Sunday.
I'm officially watching Sunday. Roger dance. Roger, come on, sorry. Stand up and do it.
No,
if we're going to do it, you got to do it.
Well, if I stand up.
There you go. Look at Roger. I wish everybody was listening.
He looks like one of those bobbleheads. In
that's what it looks like right from there.
It looks like a bobblehead.
Just remember, weebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
You tell him, Roger.
That's right. Yeah, you're coordinated, so he's not going to fall down.
Oh, no, you're looking at the wrong monitor.
I swear, the way he did his head like that, looked like a...
Can you do it, Carl?
No, I have no coordination, unless it's ping pong.
You're sexy and I know it.
That's Roger speaking.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy.
We know it too, Roger.
My excitement is not from the music. When you said you got X minus one coming up next,
mm-hmm.
I want to do with the echo. I want to do the opening.
Yeah, X minus one.
Oh, I love that show.
It's coming up for you, buddy. But we're going to tune into the conclusion of Phil Harris and Alice Faye in just a moment. But I would like Mike Costello to tell us a little bit about our Facebook page.
Yeah, we're on Facebook. You can like us, WGN Radio Theater. Check out the pictures of all the actors in these old-time radio shows. And I've got a little bit of information about each of these episodes that we're hearing tonight.
Okay, so. Very cool. All right, and do us a big favor, folks. We'd really appreciate it if you could log on. It doesn't have to be right now, but if you log on to Facebook and you do go to our Facebook page, please like us. We want to build our likes.
And we also just posted a picture of our friend George White, who is here from Ion Media Network. So, you know, if you just want to check it out, he's got his website up there and some information about his show, Master Plan. It is on our Facebook page now.
All right, check that out. All right, it's time now for the conclusion to the very first episode in the new series for Phil Harris and Alice Faye for sponsor Rexall, October 3rd, 1948, the conclusion of Phil Harris and Alice Faye.
Come on, will you? Let's go.
We're driving.
Now, wait a minute. Now, look, when we get down to the sponsors, let's all try to do this thing right.
What do you mean, right?
Look, Remley.
Yeah?
There's a right way to do a thing, and there's a wrong way. There's them that does, and them that don't, and them that says they will but won't. So if Satan tempts you, hold on tight, cause you can't do wrong doing right. There's them that shall and them that sham, them that wish they could but can't, but it seems that does, it seems the life, cause you can't do wrong doing right. Look at that gal Delilah, she had them all in a spin. She clipped the mighty Samson, but she got caught when the house fell in. So you see, there's got to be just one road for you and me. Let old Satan know he's lost the fight, cause you can't do wrong doing right.
You gotta do right.
Well, make me know.
Yes, you gotta do right.
Yeah, keep a preaching.
If you wanna see the light,
well, tell me, brother.
Cause you can't do wrong when you're doing right.
There's them that's good and them that's mean, and there's that somewhere in between, but it looks to me from what I've seen that you can't do wrong doing right. There's them that's meek and them that's bold. Now don't ask me, but I've been told it's the meek that plays them harps of gold, cause you can't do wrong doing right. Now look at old Big Goliath bragging about his size, digging on little David, but he got his right between the eyes. And so you see, there's got to be just one road for you and me. Let old Satan know he's lost the fight, cause you can't do wrong doing right.
You mustn't do wrong.
That's right with me.
No, you mustn't do wrong.
That's philosophy.
If you want to get along.
Oh, I believe it now.
Cause you'll never get along if you're doing wrong.
Now, they threw Daniel to the lions. The king had it done. He's the law. But it wasn't long till Daniel had all of them cats drinking milk out of straws. And so you see, there's got to be just one road for you and me. Let old Satan know he's lost the fight. Cause you can't do wrong doing right. No, you can't do wrong doing right.
Cause you can't do wrong when you're doing what is right.
Keep on doing right.
Hey, this sure is a big place the sponsor has here.
Naturally, it's big.
Yeah.
You don't think Harris would be associated with anything infinitesimal, do you?
Hey, Alice. Now, listen to me now. We never met these people before, and we got to convince them that we're the ones they want for their radio show. Now, look. What do you think we ought to say to them?
Well, I think we should be gracious. Let's tell them that we're happy and honored to be considered for the job.
Yeah? Hmm? Well, we could tell them we're talented and popular.
Why don't you just tell them you're Ozzie and Harriet?
Control yourself, Remley. There ain't much demand for softball guitar players. Look, do we go in here, Alice?
No, that's the entrance to the drugstore. We go in this door to go to the offices. Come on. Now, please, boys. This is a dignified company, so please, please be on your best behavior, huh?
Well, where's the president? Why isn't he down here to meet us?
Frankie.
Wow.
Well, look, we're still a little early, so I think I'll go in and shop around the store. And I want you two fellas to sit right here in the reception room. I don't want you to move until I get back. I don't want you two to get into any trouble. You hear?
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear. Hey, Curly.
Yeah.
You mind if I kiss Alice when she comes back?
What for?
If I'm going to be henpecked by her, I want to get in on some of that good stuff, too.
Alice, don't henpeck me. I do as I please.
Okay, then. Let's go in and look around the store.
Okay.
Wow, what a layout. Hey, look at all the customers. They must do a terrific business here, huh?
Certainly they do a terrific business. This is big-time stuff you're in now.
Yeah, man.
Hey, just think, Remley. As soon as we sign the contracts, we're part of this place. We're members of the Rexall family.
Members of the family?
Sure.
Excuse me.
Frankie, get out of that chair. What's the matter with you? We don't own the place.
I was just trying to borrow a couple of bucks. You can't put the lug on your own family. Who can you do?
Will you come on and get out behind that counter before somebody sees you? If the manager ever happened to come along and
beg your pardon, young man, but would you mind waiting on me? I want some cosmetics.
I'm sorry, lady, but
First, I'd like to get a home permanent wave kit. The kind you're demonstrating.
Look, lady, we ain't demonstrating. No.
Quiet, young man. I'm talking to your twin. The one that has the Tony. Now, may I have a kit, please?
I can't do that, lady, because
Are you going to wait on me, or do I have to go someplace else?
Go someplace else. Who cares?
Frank. lady, we'll be very happy to wait on you. Now, if you'll just excuse me a minute while I slip into my smock.
May I help you?
Now, Remley, if we can make a big sale to this dame, it'll prove to the company that we have their interests at heart. It'll make a big impression on them.
All right.
Then keep quiet. Now, madam, now, let's see. You wanted a permanent way. Ah, here it is. A dandy. Now then, is there anything else you could use in the line of beauty aids?
No. No, I never use any beauty aids.
Obviously.
What did you say?
Oh, I said, obviously, you don't need any beauty aids.
That ain't what you said, Curly. You said...
Never mind. What I'm trying to say is that, well, you don't need anything artificial. Now, I could suggest eyeshadow, but your eyes have enough natural sparkle already.
Oh!
And then I could try to sell you rouge, but your cheeks, why, your cheeks have enough natural color.
Oh, well, I guess you're right. But you've been so nice, I feel I should buy something. I could use a jar of wrinkle cream.
What for? Anyone can see you have enough natural wrinkles.
Never been so insulted in all my life. I'm going to see the manager and report.
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute, lady. Please.
Now, surely a pretty young thing like you wouldn't cause trouble for a pretty young thing like me.
Well, I...
Why, when I look into your limpid blue eyes, I can't imagine a complaint being uttered by those luscious... tender lips.
Oh!
You got her, Curly.
Never miss it. She's liable to be 2 hours coming out of this. Hey, Remley, if I could only bottle this stuff for Rexall, he'd make a fortune.
You wanted to sell me?
Oh, yes. Well, I was thinking the lipstick way. Of course, you don't need it, but it just might enhance the beauty of your ruby lips.
Well, I don't know about that shade. I'd like to see it on somebody first.
Well, I don't have anybody here that I can demonstrate it on, but...
Get away from me, Curly. Wait.
Now, come up here and stop squirming. Well, make like a Cupid's bow. Mm. Come on, pucker up. Tighter, a little tighter. That's it. Hold it right there. Wow. Hey, how's it look on him, lady?
It looks ridiculous on him. But I do like the shade. I'll take it. Oh, perhaps I'd better have a little rouge to go with the lipstick.
Very well.
You'd like the rouge demonstrated, too, wouldn't you, lady?
Well, if it isn't too much trouble.
No trouble at all. Hold your head up, Curly.
Now, wait a minute. I ain't the type.
Hold still, apple cheek.
All right. Put it on. But don't cover my dimple.
Ah, a little dab. Little schmear here. Well, how do you like it, madam?
It looks a little too dark.
Well, it won't look that dark on you.
Are you sure?
Well, positive. He has a heavy beard and you haven't.
Report you.
But lady, please don't go. Well, lady, please don't. Now you did it, Remley.
Don't blame me. You started this.
Hey, we must look very cute with these cosmetics on our faces. We better wipe it off before somebody sees us.
Well, if it ain't through the Andrews sisters. What are you two girls up to anyway?
We're not up to anything. We're going to work for the company, and we were demonstrating some of the cosmetics.
You work here? Good. I want to buy something. Wait on me. Well, don't stand there, Gertrude. Wait on me.
I wonder if they serve Mickey's at the soda fountain. Look, kid. I'm here to sign a radio contract with this company, so get lost, will you? Go back to the grocery. I'm in enough trouble already.
You're in trouble, Mr. Harris? Is there anything I can do? Help get you in a little deeper.
Oh, hey, Curly, look, here comes that dame we waited on and the manager's with her.
Oh, no, Frankie, we gotta get out of here before somebody recognizes.
Yeah, come on.
Well, come on.
Hey, wait a minute. Nobody can report us because nobody knows who we are.
I do!
Hey, Frankie, we can't leave him here to tell on us.
We better take him with us.
Yeah, wait a minute. Oh, Julius! Come here a minute.
I don't wanna!
I got something for you.
You can mail it to me. It's my duty as an Eagle Scout to tell the manager who you guys are.
You can't do that, Julius. If he finds out who we are, I won't get their radio show and it'll be all your fault.
Yeah. Office.
Frankie, we can't let him do it. We gotta get him.
You're faster than I am, Curly. You grab him.
Which way'd he go?
The end of the aisle and turn right.
Okay, I'll get him and when I...
Maybe you should have turned left. You okay, Curly?
Yeah, I'm all right. I cut my hand.
Ooh, look what I did to this perfume counter.
Hey, Curly, we better get out of here. There's a big crowd gathering. Here comes the manager with a couple of cops.
Well, let's get out this side door fast.
All right.
You. Hey.
Huh?
We're back in the reception room.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you gonna go up to see the president and sign the contract
now? Oh, you know I can't. Julius is probably up there giving him an earful now. I haven't got a prayer for the job. Thanks to you. Let's go inside the drugstore. You handpicked? Let's go inside the drugstore.
Oh, leave me alone.
I can't let well enough alone. If Alice ever finds out what
I... Oh, there you are, boys. I've been looking all over for you. Oh, Phil, about the contract.
Look, Alice, now wait. I've sort of changed my mind about working for this company.
Oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. It's too late, Filthy. I've just come from the president's office, and the contracts are already signed.
But, honey, I... They are?
Mm-hmm. I have them right here. The company signed them, and so have I. Now, all you have to do is put your signature on to make it official.
Oh, honey. Ain't nobody like you. You're wonderful.
Yeah, ain't I? Well, here's the contract. Go into the president's office and sign it.
There's no sense in disturbing him. I'll just sign it out here and slide it under the door. Hey, give me your pen, Frankie.
Yeah, here you are, Curly.
Thanks. Ouch! Oh, darn it, I can't hold a pen in this hand.
Oh, Phil, your hand is cut. How did it happen?
Well, I cut it downstairs at the at the lunch counter.
Yeah, they serve very sharp sandwiches.
Well, sign it with your left hand, Phil.
I can't write with my left hand, but I gotta get it signed right away. Hey, Remley.
Huh?
You're good at forging signatures. You sign my name.
Okay, if you insist. There. That does it. Now I'll take it right into the president's office and give it to his secretary. I'll be right back. Well, everything's all set, Curly. The contracts are signed, sealed, and delivered. I'll keep your copy for you.
Why should you keep it? It's my contract, ain't it? Hey, Remley.
Pardon?
You signed my name to it, didn't you?
Not exactly, Curly.
What do you mean?
I didn't know how to spell Phil Harris, so I just signed it Frank Remley.
Oh, no! You listen to me, Remley. You ain't going to get away with this.
Quiet,
I'm not going to
leave. As I was saying, Alice, with you and me as stars of the show, we'll give Rexall the best program they ever had.
You think so?
Sure.
Frankie.
Yes.
Do you think we ought to keep Phil?
Oh, I think so.
You do.
He can lead the band for my vocals.
Listen, Remley, if my right hand wasn't cut, I'd slug you.
Control yourself, Harris. There ain't much demand for bleeding band leaders.
Your independent Rexall family druggist invites you to enjoy the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show again next Sunday at the same time. Look for the blue and orange sign in your Rexall family druggist window. It means that he carries the 2,000 or more fine, pure drug products made by Rexall. He recommends them. Things like aspirin and antiseptics and the medicines put in the prescriptions your doctor writes. Because he knows you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall. This program was produced and directed by Paul Phillips. The part of Frankie Remley was played by Elliot Lewis, and Julius was played by Walter Tetley. Alice Faye appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox. This is Bill Foreman wishing good health to all from Rexall. Sunday is fun day. Be sure to stay tuned to this station for the Edgar Bergen Show, which follows immediately.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the first episode of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show from October 3rd, 1948, sponsored by Rexall. And you heard Elliot Lewis in the cast. Also, Walter Tetley, Lisa. Walter Tetley played Leroy in The Great Gildersleeve. You know that, right?
I do. And I also know that Sunday is fun day. You
That's
know
right.
why?
That's right. Sunday's fun day.
Because it's one of the days we do WGN Radio Theater. So
that is true.
It is a fun day.
I could not agree with you more for once.
For
once. for once. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Mike, world record, she is awake.
She's awake.
She did not fall asleep again. And this is like, what, 3-4 weeks now?
She had to stay awake because earlier you said that we would play it if Lisa stays awake.
Yeah.
Oh, so the pressure is on.
Kind of had to be awake.
But she actually looks wide awake. I mean, at 1 o'clock in the morning, usually right around here, she's kind of dozing off.
Yeah,
she's
a sucker. That did it. For
that's
me.
What it was.
It was
yeah.
that cherry sucker with the what did we say was in the sucker? Some amaretto or something?
Hang on a second. Let's get to George's.
That was a tequila one.
It was a tequila sucker, yes.
Yeah. All right.
Well, wait a minute. Doesn't liquor kind of make you drowsy?
Yeah.
Actually, to be completely honest with you, Roger, I don't drink liquor, so I don't know. Nothing. Zero. Yeah. Zip.
Well, it was a sugar rush. That's why she's
there you go. A little sugar will do it for me.
Well, she's wide awake, and that means we are going to play X-1 in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. But first, our sponsor segment.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Our bobblehead is bobbling up there. Okay. Ratchet and Clank is an upcoming computer animated science fiction film. Roger. And stars this actor as Victor Von Eon, a villainous lieutenant.
Victor Von Eon?
Correct.
All right. So the actor that plays Victor Von Eon is a very famous actor. And if you can tell us who he is, you're going to win two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show. And the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He wrote and starred in the film that won the Academy Award for the Best Picture released in 1976.
All I wanted to do out of fight was prove I was no bum, that I had the stuff to make a good pro,
You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Lisa?
Giveaway.
All right, give us a call, 312-981-7200. If you can tell me who that celebrity is, you'll win two tickets to the auto show. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
All I wanted to do out of fight was prove I was no bum, that I had the stuff to make a good pro,
Take her to the zoo.
Remember that line from the movie? Take her to the zoo.
Okay, you done?
Yeah.
Okay, it's Frank's turn from Lincolnwood. Hey, Frank.
Hey, guys. How are you?
How you doing? Good,
hey, Frank.
Good. Do you know that voice?
Sure, that's unmistakably Sylvester Stallone.
You are absolutely right. He is unmistakable, and he is still working, and he will be the voice in this upcoming movie, Ratchet and Clank. But you are a winner. You've won a pair of tickets to the Chicago Auto Show running February 13th through the 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, the exclusive bank of the show, and we hope you enjoy going. I hope you have a chance to go to the auto show and enjoy it.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you. And
thanks,
appreciate
Frank.
Your listening to the show.
All right, my friend George White is here. Before we tune into X-1, let's talk a little bit more about your ION show, Master Plan.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yep. Master Plan. It's starting this year.
Thinking of a master plan.
Yeah, think of a master plan. I mean, imagine it's these entrepreneurs, cameras follow them around, they're putting these big deals together, and you're getting the inside scoop on all of these deals. Very, very intriguing.
Yeah, you don't see like a bunch of guys standing in front of a plane or a helicopter. You see the guys in the plane after a bad day or maybe during a good day and what's really going on. It's not showboating. It's showing the truth. And sometimes the truth is great and sometimes it's unbelievably bad.
And one of these entrepreneurs is this beautiful woman as well.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Dina Ganesh. She's a investment banker and lingerie model from New York. She's unbelievable.
She's like 25 years old.
Frightingly smart.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even
wonderful.
Smarter than Lisa, maybe.
Well,
could that be possible,
I can't
Lisa?
Comment.
Can't be.
No.
Can you tell us some of the places you've traveled, even though you don't tell us the actual deals?
Sure.
Just to
we've been to Dubai twice this year. We've had meetings with members of the highest level of the royal family. We've looked at some of the most amazing projects. I stayed in the hotel that caught on fire New Year's Eve. I wasn't there during the fire.
Alaska.
We've been back and forth across the country, Los Angeles. We've been to New York and the usual kind of places. But
right.
We have plans to go to India to the South Pacific. It's going to be really interesting.
Well, you know, with what I have to pay Lisa to do this show, she could qualify as one of the entrepreneurs on the
program.
Well,
I'm not average. Didn't you say it was average people doing extraordinary things?
Yeah, no, the whole mission is exactly what we talked about.
I'm definitely not in the average category. It's up to you whether you think I'm above or below, but average not.
Lisa could be one of the entrepreneurs on the show.
You very well may become one. The concept is to spawn more shows.
Show them your pedicure. Show them the pedicure. See, this is something she does, like, daily. You have your
pedicure?
Own... You're of your own
fine
manicurist.
Line of,
no, I'm not very artistic.
And it would be, Madge from this X-Minus One show?
If Madge was still doing it, I would find her.
So we're pitching George on the idea. Let's talk a little bit about our show that we're going to do for George on Ion Television. Lisa and I are going to be like on a couch. We're going to be eating popcorn.
Not sitting too closely, though.
No, we're going to be eating popcorn.
We're not touching.
And I like
we're going to play a classic television in the back. Right? And then, you know, maybe it's a classic television show of Jack Benny or whatever, and we're going to comment on it in the breaks. No, we won't.
Have a little fun banter. Who doesn't love the Honeymooners?
Right. We'll play the Honeymooners. We'll play Gunsmoke, Bonanza, these types of shows. And Lisa and I
love Lucy, please.
Yeah. And we won't bother people. We'll let them enjoy the program.
Well, you'll bother
the breaks,
them, but I won't.
I try to, yes. And then we'll talk about the the stars and this, sort of like what we do here, but with television.
We'll argue a little
Sound
bit,
good?
But, you know.
This is the exact mission of Master Plan. Master Plan, the show, is to spawn more shows.
Right.
So this is exactly what we're supposed to be doing. You're living a Master Plan moment right
so
now.
So maybe what can
I'll
happen.
I'll be the master. He can be the planner.
Maybe have us on Master Plan first to sort of launch it, and then we have our own show.
Speaking of master, maybe I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah.
I'm getting a vision of you in a costume already on that one.
But you can't
I said
show
I
your,
want to be the master.
Lisa, you can't show your belly button, though, if it's
no,
I Dream of Jeannie, right?
I know that. That was, you know, during a time
George,
period.
George, I am going to be watching for Master Plan. Will you please let me know so I can tell my audience and also have you back on when it premieres? And I know you're in pre-production right now, but it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, look for us on Facebook at Master Plan or Master Plan TV Show on Facebook. A big shout-out to Hannah Mermaid, one of our stars. It's her birthday today.
Oh, yeah.
Look her up. She's an amazing woman. We're working with her on an incredible show.
And for more information, you can go to WGN Radio Theater Facebook page, and you can communicate with George that way.
Looking forward to it.
Way to go, George. Good luck with the show. We wish you all the best with it. All right, it's time now for a good sci-fi adventure on X-1. And this series came to radio in 1955. You know, radio was already kind of classic radio, dramatic radio was already losing its ground to television. And this series came to NBC Radio. It was revival of Dimension X. Dimension X was the first sort of adult science fiction series, and X-1 was its revival. Ernest Canoy and George Lefferts adapted the best sci-fi stories from the greatest writers like Isaac Asimov, Ray Bradbury, Robert A. Heinlein, Frederick Pohl. And there were no movie stars on this, just radio stars, but the best of the best, like Louis Van Ruten, Bob Hastings, Paul Frees, William Conrad. I think you will enjoy this episode from 1956 called The Old Die Rich, and it stars Jim Bowles and Madge, the Palmolive dishwashing liquid lady herself, Jan Miner. Let's tune this in, part one now of X-1.
This is Walter O'Keefe inviting you to listen in on the Nightline. Tonight, live the incredible life of ages yet to come in a time that might be a million years from now on X-1. Now, an incredible story of the world beyond.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1. Fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, The Old Die Rich by H.L. Gold. But first, hear this.
Hello, I'm Dorothy Olson, singing schoolteacher on NBC's big weekday musical show, Bandstand. But right now, I'd like to talk to you parents. I'd like to ask you a few questions as you're getting ready to send your youngsters back to school. Are you helping your child get the most out of his school? Do you make his home conditions favorable enough for him to do his homework? Do you show an interest in his schoolwork? Remember, your child's success in school and later on in life depends to a large degree on your attitude towards his schooling today. And there's another important thing. Everyone needs a good send-off in the morning, and that goes for children, too. Be sure your children have a substantial breakfast and a cheery goodbye before they head for school each day. Remember, you can't expect your child to do it all himself. Encourage him in his schooling, both in your attitude and in your actions as he goes back to school this fall.
Now, X minus one, and tonight's story, The Old Die Rich.
Doc, what did she die of?
Not eating, Sergeant. Malnutrition.
Oh, look, Doc, in the top bureau drawer, she has bank books showing $32,000 in five different banks. She had the price of a meal.
Malnutrition induced by senile psychosis. They starve because they're less afraid of death than of digging into their savings.
I don't know, Doc. Doesn't feel right to me.
Listen, Weldon, just because you can get up on a stage and play the part of some 70-year-old geezer, that doesn't qualify you as an expert on gerontology.
I just don't believe it. It isn't right. I don't feel it.
Well, lucky for me, I don't have to feel these things inside of me because I'm a doctor, not an actor, nor an amateur detective. Sergeant, malnutrition induced by senile psychosis. I'll order the wicker basket from Bellevue. So long, Barrymore.
Well, he's right, Mark. We get a couple of these cases every year. Some old bat starving to death with $17,000 in old bills pinned on his union suit. Turns up all the time.
It doesn't feel right.
Well, Doc knows his business.
But he doesn't know old people. I do. I've gone to a lot of trouble to study their habits. It isn't easy to starve to death. Hunger is a pretty potent instinct.
Yeah, but Mark, you can't argue with the facts. There were the five bank books, $32,000.
She took good care of them. They look almost new. Let's see. April 23rd, 1907. Deposit of $150. The ink's pretty dark. Shouldn't it be faded?
Well, she probably never took it out in the light.
Anyone ever think of testing the ink?
Oh, now, Mark, this is strictly against regulations. I've got to take these books down to the squad room and sign them in.
Pretty dark ink for 1907.
Well, it's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I could hold them over tonight, bring them down to the property clerk in the morning.
Good. I know where I can find a chemist.
Mr. Weldon, there's no doubt of it. The ink sample is typical of inks used 50 years ago. But 1907 would be about right. But according to the amount of oxidation, it's fresh enough to be only a few months old.
Well, couldn't that be the result of unusually careful handling?
Yes, Sergeant. Yes, I suppose it could. An airtight compartment, perhaps, sealed with one of the inert gases or a vacuum. That might account for the lack of normal aging.
Lou, you can't keep inert gases in a top bureau drawer in a fourth-floor walk-up.
Yeah, well, it's probably some simple explanation.
For fresh ink, half a century old.
Mm-hmm.
after that, I got a television part that kept me busy for about a month. And then Lou Pape called me up and asked me to come down to Bellevue.
Mark, is that you?
Hi, Lou. What's up?
An old guy I found wandering around down on Hester Street. He was suffering from malnutrition. He had $17,000 in cash inside the lining of his jacket.
He's alive?
No, not now he isn't. Doc's got him in the room there. But he was stumbling around when the cop on the beat picked him up.
Did he say anything?
Just before he went out completely, he did say something, maybe three or four times.
What was it?
El Greco.
You mean the artist? Anything else, Lou?
Yeah, it's nothing for me, but we found the old guy's room, and there was an ad thumbtacked over the sink. Nothing unusual.
Yeah?
Here it is.
Men and women wanted. Light work suitable for old people. No references required. Now, why would an old man with $17,000 in cash be answering an ad like that?
All righty, let's take a break here on X-1, July 17th, 1956. A terrific story by H.L. Gold called The Old Die Rich, where elderly people are found starved to death despite having large quantities of money in their pockets. What's the cause, Lisa? You have any idea?
I wouldn't want to give away the secret.
Yeah,
now,
you don't want to tell. We're going to get back to it so you can hear the end. But great cast in this. Jim Bowles, who was one of the actors on I Love a Mystery, Carl Nemorsa's series, I Love a Mystery, and then Jan Minor, of course, Madge, Palmolive dishwashing liquid. You're soaking in it, Lisa. Cast also includes William Zuckert, Guy Rep, Wendell Holmes, Ralph Camargo, and Fred Collins doing the announcing, as heard on NBC. We'll get back to X-1 in just a few moments. I am so depressed right now.
I'm so happy right now.
I am so bummed out. Losing to Lisa. Oh, man. I'm telling you, I lost the bet she wanted.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Why, Roger? Why can't you stand up for me?
I did. I said you had two master's degrees.
Yeah, but you didn't. You said I couldn't say anything. You got to stand up for me, Roger. I need you.
I knew you were right. I didn't.
Gosh,
you didn't need any help.
I hate losing to Lisa.
Right as might.
She never lets me hear the end of it. You know, Lisa, before we went on the air here, let's tell our listeners, before we went on the air here, I was a big spender. I took Mike and Lisa to Argo Tea right across.
He bought me an apple.
He bought you an empty cup.
It was $9. It was $9.95. I bought her an apple for 95 cents. So guess what?
What?
I owe you a nickel.
Oh no!
See, this is what I have to deal with.
Hey, I put money in too. Maybe I'm the one who bought the apple for Lisa.
See, he spent a dollar. I think
he
bought my apple
because it was you put a dollar in.
Right.
It was $9.95.
He bought my apple, which was 95 cents.
I owe you a nickel.
Hey, Sheen, Sean, you got the song "Hey Big Spender"?
Listen,
Carl,
money doesn't grow on trees.
Carl,
you know, doesn't grow on trees. If it did, I would be a monkey. Believe me, I'd be climbing up there. Know it. I'd be climbing up there. I'd be a koala bear.
Actually, I don't believe koalas are bears.
They're not?
I don't think
I'd be a koala, whatever.
Koalas are not actually bears.
Okay. Well,
right, Roger?
All right.
I'm going with you. You're the smart one.
Enough of this.
You won money tonight. I go with the winner.
Enough of this hijinks. It's time to get back to what we do here. X-1 is the radio show, and this is from July 17th, 1956. It's called The Old Die Rich, starring Jim Bowles and Jan Minor. Here's the conclusion now of X-1.
It was an old brownstone house in the East 80s. I got in line with the rest of the applicants. My face was lined with collodion wrinkles, and I wore an antique shiny suit and run-down shoes. It was a good makeup job. I looked more authentic than the rest of the old-timers who were waiting for the interview. I finally came up to where a woman was asking the questions.
Name?
Kernet. Louis Kernet. Kernet.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any references? Family?
No, ma'am. I haven't got any family. I had a cousin in Salt Lake City. Haven't seen him in 30 years or more. The ad said you didn't want no references.
That's right. And now, will you wait in the other room?
Yes, ma'am. Do I get the job, ma'am?
Just wait in the other room.
I shuffled into the other room and sat down to wait. I'd planned to be dozing the way an old man would, and so my eyes were closed when I heard the door close. When I opened them, I was looking into the barrel of a .38 revolver.
Are you awake now, Mr. Weldon?
Ma'am? What?
I don't think you need to carry on anymore. If you need any further convincing, you're Mark Weldon, you're about 40 years old, and you played the same character on television about 6 weeks ago. You played it fairly well.
Thank you. Would you mind putting down the gun?
You've been very busy recently trying to find out why senile psychotics starve themselves to death.
You know a great deal more about me than I do about you.
I would be glad to enlighten you. My name is May Roberts. I'm the daughter of the late Dr. Anthony Roberts, the physicist who was dismissed from the Brookhaven Atomic Energy Laboratory 5 years ago.
Oh, I assume you're connected with those starvation cases, or you wouldn't have known that I was investigating them, huh?
Well, that's obvious, isn't it? I'm not afraid of professional detectives, Mr. Weldon. They deal only with facts. But I don't like amateurs. They guess too much. They don't stick to reality. Consequently, they're likely to get too close to the truth.
Unfortunately, Miss Roberts, I'm nowhere near the truth. I haven't the slightest idea how you're tied in with these starvation deaths.
Oh, I intend to show you, Mr. Weldon. I'm happy to announce that you have the job.
Oh, now look.
All right, Mr. Weldon, right ahead of you, please. Through that door. It will take about 5 minutes for the field to build up, Mr. Weldon. Please get in the cathode area.
You mean that wire cage?
Go ahead.
All right, all right.
Now. I wouldn't advise moving now, Mr. Weldon. The wire carries some 10,000 volts.
Well, now look, Miss Roberts.
Mr. Weldon, you are curious, and you could turn out to be a great nuisance to me. As long as you've come this far, we might as well both benefit by it.
Benefit?
Yes. On the floor, you'll find a set of envelopes. There's a set of instructions in each. Follow them carefully.
I don't get it.
You will. Use the envelopes in the order they are arranged.
Look, what's all this about?
Mr. Weldon, I meant it when I said this could be a benefit to both of us. There's no use in my explaining. You'll find out. And don't try to escape. It can't be done. All right, now, the field generators are ready.
Now, look, Miss Roberts, this is absolutely...
Just follow instructions, Mr. Weldon.
I blinked. I was standing outside a bank on a sunny day in spring. The cars were square with flat radiators in the front. There was a trolley car passing by. And suddenly I realized that the last trolley car stopped running in Manhattan years ago. I tried to figure it out. It was New York, all right. I recognized some of the buildings. First, I figured it must have been hypnosis. And then I looked at the first of the envelopes in my pocket. I read it and walked into the bank.
Yes, sir? Our Mr. Golden tells me you wish to open an account.
Yes, that's right.
Well, we're very happy to have a new depositor. Very happy indeed. Of course, you realize the institution is in sound condition. Very sound. You needn't worry about all those rumors in this bank. No, sir. Solid, solid.
That's good.
Now then, name, Mark Weldon. You have no address in the city at present?
No.
And you're depositing $150?
That's right.
All righty. I'll just check the slip. $150, right? The date, May 15th, of course, 1931.
I went outside the bank and I stood there in the spring sunlight and let the terror soak into me. The impossibility of the entire situation was gnawing at the edges of my mind. And then suddenly, I wasn't there. It was 1934. And I found myself inside a broker's office.
As I understand it, Mr. Weldon, you're buying this stock for Dr. Anthony Roberts.
That's right.
I assume the stock will be in his name.
That's right. I'm just acting as agent. I follow instructions.
Of course, of course. Are you sure I can't convince you that you're making a mistake?
No, no, these are my instructions.
Mr. Weldon, we are a reputable brokerage house, and I feel quite shaky about putting any client's money into this kind of security. Frankly, I see no future in it. It's a rare metal for which there is very little use for industrial purposes. However, if your client is adamant...
I have my instructions, sir.
Very well, then, in the name of Dr. Anthony Roberts, 100 shares of Montana Uranium. Oh, well. Very unwise. Most unwise.
It went that way about 50-50. I'd deposit money in my own name in various banks at various times, and then I'd buy a stock or make a bet for May Roberts. On June 21st, 1932, I bet Jack Sharkey to take the heavyweight title away from Max Schmeling. There was Singing Wood in 1933 at Belmont Park, and Max Barrow were Primo Carnera. I went on skipping through the years like a flat stone over water, touching here and there for a few minutes to an hour at a time. It was in early October 1938, about 5 hours after I had left May Roberts' house, before I realized what she had me doing. I was making deposits and winning sure bets, just as those senile psychotics had done. The ink of their bank books was fresh because the entries in them were fresh. The ink wasn't given a chance to oxidize. At the rate I was going, I'd be back at my own time in a few hours with $15,000 compound interest in cash, to say nothing of those bets. But those old people had died of starvation in spite of all that cash. Well, I was hungry, so I got myself a hamburger and went out the door. When I hit the sidewalk, it happened again.
Don't touch the cage yet, Mr. Weldon. I'll have to clear the charge.
Hey, what happened to my hamburger?
What?
The hamburger. I had it here. It's gone. I'm hungry.
I'll get you something to eat, Mr. Weldon, before your next trip. You've done pretty well for yourself, haven't you?
Yes, I have. About 15,000.
You can come out now. But be careful. Don't touch the contacts. The field reacts on a random factor for at least an hour after it's cut off.
Hey, I had ketchup on my sleeve. It's gone.
Mr. Weldon, I want to talk seriously with you. You've seen now part of what I'm doing.
Part?
I've been able to save things that would have been lost otherwise. I've sent people back to find precious treasures that would have been destroyed or would have disappeared.
Like an El Greco painting?
Yes. And the original score of Mozart's Magic Flute that would have been burned in 1942. And a Picasso miniature that would have been lost at sea in 52. I have them all here.
Stolen?
No. Bought with money from the year itself at a fair price. Well, Mr. Weldon, I sent you back because I've needed someone to work with me on a regular basis. Someone who's faster and more alert than the old people I've hired up until now. I assume you're interested. And that we can make our plans without my using this revolver?
Well, this one is a little hard to work out. You see, I got interested in this business because they found some old people dead of malnutrition and $30,000 or so tucked away in their pockets. They'd been gone a month or more. They had to eat during that time, didn't they? And when they came back, the food disappeared, like my hamburger. It disappeared all at once. In one fast jolt, they starved to death.
No. You don't understand. They just couldn't take the field transition.
Oh, no, you can't tell me that, because I know how hungry I am, and I was only gone about 12 hours. They were murdered.
Get back.
You know, they say a hungry man gets pretty desperate. He'll do almost anything. Let go. Let go of it. Let go.
My arm.
Look out. Look out, the cage, the contacts! She fell into that cage and disappeared before she hit the ground. I didn't know what happened. I know she said the field worked in a random action, whatever that meant. Lou didn't believe the story I told him.
You mean there won't be any more of them?
No more senile psychotics starving to death with a bankroll in their hip pocket?
No more, Lou. I was wrong. There was one more case, and perhaps it was the strangest one. A woman was found wandering in Bryant Park just before she died of acute starvation. The strange thing was, she was young, not more than 30. And the other was that she had $17,000 stuffed in her pocketbook and a bullet wound in her arm that the medical examiner said was at least 2 months old. I guess that's what she meant by random action.
Fred Collins speaking, and I'll have another word about X minus one in a moment. As a child, Louise had been a lonely orphan, until the Harvey family came along and took her into their home and into their hearts. As Louise herself says, they gave me everything, including the love I longed for. They fed me and clothed me as if I were one of their own. And I repaid them with treachery and heartache. You'll wonder if Louise will be able to repair the damage she's done to a group of splendid people as you listen tomorrow to My True Story. My True Story, with a complete drama every morning about people and their problems, is one of radio's most popular morning programs. You'll hear My True Story every weekday just before NBC Bandstand. So remember, My True Story for drama and NBC Bandstand for music and lighthearted entertainment. Together they make a wonderfully varied morning's listening every weekday on most of these NBC stations. You have just heard X Minus One, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Share Alike by Daniel F. Galloway. When the experts discovered a way to enable two objects to occupy the same space at the same time, they thought they'd solved the housing problem. But on the other hand, they created an exasperating new one. Read it in Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X Minus One has brought you The Old Die Rich, a story written by H.L. Gold and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in our cast were Ralph Camargo as Mark Weldon, Patricia Wheel as May Roberts, Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Pape, and others in our cast were Harvey Hayes, Roger DeCoven, and Guy Repp. This is Fred Collins speaking. X Minus One was directed by George Voutsas and is an NBC Radio Network production.
You'll be on the right line for exciting nighttime entertainment when you hear Nightline. Tonight, over most of these NBC stations.
The familiar NBC chimes there at the end of X Minus One. That's from July 17th, 1956, The Old Die Rich, starring Jim Bowles and Jan Miner. And a great episode. These adult sci-fi stories, we like to play them here on the WGN Radio Theater, along with all the detectives and the mysteries and the comedies. We ask our listeners, what would you like to hear? If you want to hear something, if you have a favorite, you want to hear it, maybe it's Suspense, maybe it's Jack Benny, maybe it's Gunsmoke, Boston Blackie, just go to our Facebook page, right, Mike?
Absolutely. Go to the Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater. Let us know what you want to hear.
All right, just go there, and when you do, please like us. Let's take a break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.